Welcome to the Monster Club.
An honest look at horror movies from lifelong horror fans.
Fair warning, you may not have seen this movie. We have... Spoilers Ho! I'm Jethel.
And I'm Tark.
This week, we continue our look back at the Final Destination franchise. And today, we're taking a look at 2003's Final Destination 2. Starring A.J. Cook, Allie Larder, and Tony Todd. Mm. Alternative title!
My alt title is Buckle Up.
Okay, yeah, that's a reasonable. Okay, it's a reasonable alternative title. Okay,
it's what popped into my head.
Well, all right then. I honestly couldn't think of another alternative title except, you know, humans are just giant chia pets filled with blood, but that just wasn't funny. All right, moving on.
I thought about Click It or Ticket, but that just seemed a little. Punch your ticket, you know, like.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Moving on.
That felt flat.
Okay, so trigger songs in this movie. There really wasn't one. In the first one, it was Rocky Mountain High.
Uh-huh.
During the initial sequence on the highway, by the way, the accident on the highway was based on the 125-car pileup of Interstate 25 in Ringgold, Georgia, March 14th, 2002.
It's claimed to be based on the 125-car pileup on I-75. But that happened in March of 2002. This movie premiered the next summer.
Yeah, that couldn't have been.
That's too close. This movie would have been in writing, in script stages and everything. I mean, the producers or the studio approached the one of the original writers for the first movie and said, hey, we'd love to do this again because the first movie, it's doing so well.
Hmm.
You know?
Yeah, I think you're right. This is too soon. I mean, there's a ton of pileups it could have been based on. I mean, I was in Tennessee when the worst highway accident ever in that state occurred. Yeah. It was a...
Now here's the interesting thing.
Imagine this. I'm living in Tennessee.
Okay.
Huge fog bank covers most of the highway.
Uh-huh.
No one slowed down.
Oh, my God.
One person clipped someone else, ended up in like an 80-car pileup.
Now it's funny that we touch on this detail of the incident being too close to that pileup, because it's also widely held that the first movie is based on the Flight 800 incident, the TWA Flight 800. But the original story treatment for the X-Files episode was written 2 years prior to that incident.
Hmm.
So that doesn't follow through either. But this also suggests something else that's disturbing.
Hmm?
What if the story ideas themselves for these movies
are premonitions?
Are harbingers of the actual deaths to come. Oh, my God.
Dun, dun, dun.
So
we have to stop these people from continuing to make movies.
Yes. I mean, was there a roller coaster accident after the script for the third one was written?
I don't know.
I don't recall anything, but you have to admit, though, it is a weird coincidence, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
I would say that if more people had died during the pileup incident, I don't think this movie would have hit theaters.
Hmm.
I think if like 30, 40 people had died in that pileup, I think the movie would have been pulled and shelved. So they, I did read where the pileup idea came from, and that was the writer. He was initially considering a hotel fire, and then he was thinking, nah, you know, we need something a little bit more spectacular. And he was just driving along the highway at some point, one of the interstates, and he saw this logging truck roll by, and it came to him, and he said, yeah, that's it. And that's where it came from.
Yep, and you have to admit, this movie caused you to not ride behind logging trucks.
Oh, absolutely. I didn't do that to begin with.
And you know what? Washington is a logging state.
Mm.
I see a lot of logging trucks. Like, nope. Get alongside might be fine. Wait, no, if it goes alongside, I might get crushed by falling logs.
No. Oh, boy. Yeah, these movies
I just want to be
really
far back enough so I can swerve out of the way. Yeah. I'd rather end up in this drainage ditch than with a log.
Pull over into the high grass along the side of the freeway, definitely. Yeah.
So the logs were CGI because real logs didn't bounce like that.
Yeah, yeah, they couldn't get them to.
So in an instance of clarity, they realized this could never happen.
Mm. Not exactly the way they wanted to. It would still be a terrible accident.
Oh, but, yeah, definitely.
But not not quite the way they needed it, because the log needed to bounce up into the
but can you imagine
the front
that
windshield.
Can you imagine that going to the screenwriter and going, you know, we hate to admit it, but this shit can never happen. Not the way you're depicting here, pal. And I have a slew. I had to nitpick the fuck out of this movie because it just bugged me so much.
Why is that?
Okay, well, let's go down the deaths, shall we?
Okay.
All right. First off, I'll say with most sequels, this is a decent movie, but it falls short of the first one.
Eh. I liked it just as much.
I didn't like it just as much. It was entertaining. I mean, Liz came out of her office during the scene where the glass panel falls on the kid, and she's like, really?
Why?
Okay, so let's go over these deaths, one by one.
That was one of the coolest deaths.
No. Okay, I'll just say, in a lump sum, a lot of horror movies, not just the Final Destination franchise, but a lot of movies base their deaths on the movie fact, not real fact, but movie fact, that the human body is incredibly fragile and easily torn apart.
Mm.
And we're not. So let's take a look at this. Evan, Lotto guy. Spring-loaded escape ladder plunges through the guy's eye while only inches from his face. It came down, stopped just an inch away from his face.
Yeah.
Then continued on to penetrate his skull. There's no momentum. There's not enough. He could have lost an eye, sure.
I think that was just death fucking with him. I think.
Oh, definitely.
In the first film they had the one, you know, clearly intentional death with the clothesline in the bathtub.
Yeah.
And then from then on they tried to make it a little bit more
Rube Goldberg.
Thank you, Rube Goldberg. They tried to make it a little bit more accidental, like death just kind of gently nudged things into happening.
Yeah.
You know.
But this
in this movie
hitting that ladder with a sledgehammer.
Yeah, yeah. In this movie, the deaths definitely feel a lot more intentional rather than accident, which I kind of like. It makes death a little bit more malicious, you know, and especially with all the, you know, hey, you're going to die kind of in-your-face irony stuff happening in the movie. So, yeah. But let's not forget the first round of death, which you skipped entirely.
Oh, you mean the highway incident in general?
The pileup itself, yes. How fucking fantastic was that?
Oh, that was. It was a fantastic scene.
Now, we all fear airplanes, getting on airplanes, because of all the, when you see something in the news about an airliner going down, it's like, oh, my God, I'm never going to fly again. But really, they're the safest way to travel.
Yeah.
The safest way. Millions of people die every year. Well, I don't know if it's millions, but
it probably is millions. But yeah, the point is, for the amount of air traffic there is in any given day, for one plane to go down is pretty freaking good.
Yeah, that's pretty freaking good record.
Man, I'm surprised. Honestly, I'm surprised there's not more than there actually are.
Yeah,
I mean, if you really want to see the amount of traffic that's in the air on any given moment, there are websites that'll show you, and it blows the fucking mind how many airplanes are in the air at any given time.
Right now, this moment.
Even at night.
Yeah. Yeah, that just blows my mind that these craft run 24/7.
Yeah.
You know, and the only stops they have are to refuel and offload and reload passengers and cargo, and that's it.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like they you know, I mean, I'm sure every few flights they have to go in for a maintenance check, you know, a total thing. But other than
it depends how far they're traveling. They have to go in and get checked for like microfractures and stuff like that. But yeah, they have regularly scheduled maintenance checkups too. But yeah, they do pressure tests and stuff like that to try to catch any fractures in the fuselage.
With this second film, they change from something that, you know, only a percentage of the country is dealt with personally. Most people probably haven't gone on an airplane. You know, I'm talking about most of the population. I know plenty of people who have never been on an airplane, and they have no reason to be on an airplane. They just don't fly. But everybody drives.
Yep.
Everybody drives or has ridden in a car.
And we've all seen loads that have not been secured properly.
Oh, absolutely. So this particular, you know, the way the huge, you know, tragedy at the beginning of these films, the big blow up, it is much more immediately relatable to the audience. And I thought that was a great way to, you know, great punchy way to start off the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So, The first death that happened differently in the beginning were character's friends in the SUV, which I thought was a great surprise because they were kind of set up as, you know, as characters.
I have a theory.
I have a theory.
Who was the first person to die in the premonition?
Ooh, who was the first person?
Yes.
It was the cop, wasn't it?
Right. I don't think that semi that sped out of control and killed her friends was aiming for her friends.
I think it was aiming for him.
It was aiming for the cop.
Mm.
And, of course, that's never brought up again. But I thought about it. It's like, okay, wait a minute. You know, they start talking about the order of events, and then they eventually conclude that it's working in reverse. It's not working in reverse. It missed the cop.
Maybe. Maybe, but they did bring up the connection to the first film, which was interesting.
Yeah,
but anyway, let's get back to the death.
Let's get back to just the conveyor belt of death.
Conveyor belt of death. There you go. There's
talk
your
about...
title. That's your alt title. Conveyor belt of death.
Exactly.
That's great.
Now let's talk about little Timmy, who was supposed to be like 9 in the script, but ended up being 15.
Yeah.
I just want to. This is not about his death, but I just want to talk about. Mom's a little overly affectionate. I mean, she's playing it out like he's a really little kid. He goes into his bedroom to comfort him at night, strokes his cheek, blah, blah, blah. For a 9-year-old, that's fine. For a 15-year-old, that's creepy as fuck.
Yeah.
That was way inappropriate.
Really, in the movie, I thought he was like 12 or 13.
Yeah, he was supposed to be 15, though.
He didn't come across as 3 years away from being an adult at all.
No, not at all.
Struck me as somebody who might be going into high school next year.
Yeah, so it's like, you know, if you're going to, okay, you originally cast the role, wrote the role for a 9-year-old, that's fine. When you cast a 15-year-old, rewrite the script for him a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You made a 15-year-old look played out way too young.
The way they interacted, everything, the way he dressed, the way he runs and you know, makes the birds fly away.
Yeah, that was not the act of a 15-year-old. No.
No, that was an act of a child.
Okay, so the issue I had with his death, he's the one that gets crushed by the falling pane of glass.
Yeah.
We do not fold like an accordion like that.
I don't know. How heavy was the glass? I mean, you got to think.
I mean, it was plate glass, but
glass for your you know, your living room window. This is for an office building. This glass is going to be thick.
It broke in the office by a bird hitting it. It didn't break when it hit him.
Well, it did shatter.
Well, once it hit the ground, but it would have hit him first. It would have broke.
Mm.
You know, this wasn't like a 6-inch thick sheet of glass.
That's true, but it was rather large.
Don't get me wrong. It would have killed him.
Yeah.
But just not in the way that they depicted. They sensationalized it.
Well, of course. It's a movie.
It's a fucking movie, like we were talking about last time. All right, so Tim's dead. His mom's all distraught.
You got to admit, it is an impactful and shocking scene. Because you say, surely somebody's going to come and save the kid. And then he's just dead. This kid.
He's a dead man.
He's a bloody pancake.
All right. They scooped him off the ground. Next in line. Nora, his mama.
Yeah.
Decapitated in an elevator.
Yeah, that was painful to watch.
That was a little painful to watch. Also highly unlikely. There are a lot of safety features in elevators.
And again, it feels like death is just manipulating objects to kill people.
You're talking hands-on.
He's not gently nudging shit that's been carefully set up in advance. He is just actively, you know, slamming the elevator up against her neck. So,
yeah, because I have seen footage of people getting pinned in elevators.
Mm-hmm.
They stop. They have safety features installed. Mm-hmm. For just these events. There are brakes if it falls. There are pressure. Well, I don't know if it's called pressure or whatever, but there are sensors to tell if something's jamming its way. You're not going to get decapitated by an elevator unless a lot of safety features fail. So, again, all these deaths are very intentional.
Well, not the next one.
Well, let's see. Impaled by PVC pipe.
Through the back of her head.
That pipe never would have gone through her headrest.
You think there's like a metal plate or something behind?
No, I'm just saying they weren't traveling at a velocity fast enough for a PVC pipe to go through her headrest. To go through the back window and then to go through the headrest? No.
Eh.
The pipe would have broke. PVC is actually pretty fragile.
I don't know. If it's shattered in a way that makes it sharp at the tip, I could see it going through the headrest. It's plausible. Mm. But
unlikely.
That aside, it was a pretty shocking and unexpected death. I did not see it coming. It was just, oh my God, and it happened.
You know who also didn't see it coming? Cat. Especially how her head was rested to the side of the pipe when the airbag blew.
Oh, I know. Why didn't the rescue people saw that shit off right away? I mean, holy crap, you've got this sharp piece of PVC pipe just hanging out next to, you know, this person's head. I mean, at least pull it back up out of the back of the vehicle. But they just left it there, and then the airbag inflates, and in an instant, she's gone.
The airbag inflates, a whole bunch of fuel that was dripping through another one of those pipe explodes.
Oh, yeah, that leads to my very favorite death.
My very favorite one that could never possibly happen in a million years.
But still entertaining as hell.
Rory the Stoner, sliced up by a flying barbed wire fence.
Dismembered and trisected. Holy shit.
Just like he didn't have bones. Or internal organs.
Oh, we saw plenty of internal organs.
Oh, yes. But they were internal organs made out of a gummy gelatin type mixture. Not actual organs or muscular structure. You know, if nothing else, it would have wrapped around him and cut him up real good.
Yeah.
Never would have just went right through him.
But again,
remember we had the conversation.
This is a movie, Jeff.
Remember when we had the conversation? People have spines.
Yeah, a spine is pretty difficult to cut
through. All of these damn movies just jab things right through the center of people and completely forget we have a spine.
Movie people aren't made with bones and calcium.
Like
and
I said, we're chia
spinal
pets.
Cords. Yes, we are.
We are China dolls filled with blood. That's all we are in these movies. We have no structure whatsoever. Humans are so fragile.
I love the way that particular death is filmed. I don't know if you've ever watched any of the behind-the-scenes stuff, but they had the actor who plays Rory dressed in a green screen fabric bodysuit, a body sock. And you know, from the neck down. And then they had, you know, the torso portion of this three-part puppet attached to his chest that he could fall over with, right? And then they had somebody out of shot manipulating the pelvic part of the puppet, and then a third person manipulating the leg.
Oh, so that wasn't CGI.
No, it wasn't at all.
Oh, nice.
And then they, you know, they green screened out the poles and everything.
Good effect.
And then they just had him fall over and had the other two people manipulate the other two pieces. And then they put in another thing that showed the arm falling off into, you know, the proper pieces and everything. And they composited it all together, and it looked wonderful.
Oh, yeah. It looked good. I didn't know it was a CGI. That was good then. All right.
Yeah.
Applause to the practical effect team then. All right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really worth going and checking out on the DVD on the behind-the-scenes stuff.
All right.
It's a really good one.
Next stuff! Or two, actually, at the same time.
Mm.
Let's talk about why does this hospital have Eugene hooked up to an acetylene tank?
They're oxygen tanks.
Oxygen tanks explode, but not like that.
Well, I mean...
Why do all these movies think that oxygen is flammable?
It causes other things to be
flammable. It feeds a fire. It will keep a fire and make it more intense, but it's not going to explode like a tank of propane.
Yeah.
I looked up on YouTube oxygen tank explosions.
Mm-hmm.
Not a single one of them involved fire.
It's all just decompression.
Right. It's rapid decompression. You're talking about a grenade blast, or if it's a large tank, a bomb. There's going to be a lot of shrapnel. He could have been killed by shrapnel, but there would have been no flames involved at all.
Where did the fire start exactly? Was it the plug unplugging from the wall?
Yes.
Okay.
Which is completely asinine to begin with. There wouldn't have been an arc of spark there.
Yeah. I can't think of anything that would be in the hospital that would be an actual flammable gas.
Not like that, no.
Yeah.
So, actually, Eugene's death, the most improbable.
Yeah. Well,
again,
they do have warnings on oxygen tanks.
Yes,
though.
They explode, but not with fire. It's not like gasoline.
Well, they'll tell you not to smoke around them and stuff. Is that just because a small fire would be exacerbated by the presence of too much oxygen?
Yes, too much oxygen would ignite a fire. But, like I said, the tank would explode like a bomb, you know, like a grenade. There'd be a lot of shrapnel, but there wouldn't be, you know, a huge ball of fire.
Like the Hindenburg had just said.
Right, so I want to know why they had an acetylene torch tank in his room.
Why were they keeping racks of what was it, towels or something?
Yeah, was he in a freaking stock room or something?
It looked like they just ran out of room. They were like, well, put him in the storeroom.
Do you ever get the idea that sometimes these people have never been to a hospital? They've never been to a movie theater. It's like, hey, how can we make this scene more believable? Well, I think if we stored a whole bunch of linens in his room, it would look great. Wait a minute.
I don't know.
What, are they storing him in a closet?
During one of the extended scenes that I saw on the Blu-ray, the purpose of the towel rack was to obscure the television that Eugene was supposed to be craning his neck to try to see. Something about the plot was being explained on the television. It's like, oh my gosh, you know, probably about the aftermath of the accident.
Yeah, probably.
And what's her
still
name?
Still dumb. All right.
Yeah.
And of course, Clear Rivers, who survived the first movie.
Oh, she
dies in the explosion from the incredibly improbable explosion. She actually causes it.
Yeah, by opening the door. How does that happen? She opens the door.
It's a movie.
And what was it? The cord was tangled around the door handle or something somehow?
I don't know.
I can't remember.
Who cares?
But anyway,
then we have poor little Brian at the end of the movie, which is the most stupid.
Now he does look about 15.
Oh God!
And that was stupid. I didn't understand that at all. Why? I mean, it was just
You throw a bit of comedy at the end of this movie, and it didn't work right at all. Her son explodes, and then boom, the friggin' arm lands in her on her dinner plate? Are you kidding me?
It was a little over the top, yeah.
It was, honestly, I was insulted by that ending. I mean, I like the Final Destination franchise, as we talked about in the last podcast. I like the Final Destination franchise. This was an insult to the franchise to end like this. It was stupid.
Eh.
I mean, yes, propane explodes. I'm not saying that it doesn't. But what caused it to explode?
Something happened. You know, death intervened. I mean, the point is they're seeing it from a distance. That's what makes it.
My thing is it's almost like they forgot, they didn't know how to write the ending to the movie. It's like, shit, how are we going to end this? Oh, let's have the grill explode and we'll have an arm hit the mom in the face or something. It's just, that, it was just dumb. They threw it together and it was stupid.
Well, the apparently, I've read this, I can't verify it, but the original ending just involves, you know, the two main characters. Not clear, but the cop and the young girl that's the primary actor in the film, just hugging it out at the hospital, saying, "Oh, we're all okay," because she had the baby, and that was it. That was supposed to be the end, but they decided that was just kind of fell flat, and so they went on to expand on it.
Yeah, they expanded on it because little Brian was supposed to die in the field, and the stoner pulled him out of the way.
That, to me, doesn't exactly make sense.
It doesn't make sense because...
Because if all of them had died in the pileup to begin with, he wouldn't have been involved in the first place. He couldn't have been part of the...
The accident wouldn't have happened.
Right.
You know, for him to pull him out of the way.
Sense, but I still find it, you know, I don't know. Comedy at the end of a horror film...
Doesn't work.
No, I think sometimes you gotta, you know, just dry stuff. You know, if you didn't like it, that's fine. But
it didn't work.
I found it fine. I didn't, you know, I didn't like, oh, well, that made the movie suck.
Well, that's it. You're fired.
Oh, well, fine. Fuck you then.
Okay, one thing we did forget to mention was all of the characters in this movie would have died already if the characters from the first movie had died when they were supposed to.
Right. I found that intensely interesting. I didn't understand the whole working backwards bullshit. But I did like the way they tied each and every one of the characters' pasts to people in the original film.
Mm-hmm.
I found that very satisfying that it was all tied in. And
what do we think of Final Destination 2? I think honestly, again, I enjoy the entire franchise. This one not as good as the first one.
I find it a good, I mean, I know you said you don't like the word continuation for this, but I like the way it is literally a continuation of the first movie's story.
Mm-hmm.
It involves Clear, and all the characters are intricately tied to the characters from the first film. And I love a story that is broken up out into parts, you know, to where one flows directly to the next.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, you know, that tie to the original film really props this one up. But I still think it would have been a great film on its own. If this had been the first Final Destination movie and there had been no previous story to connect it to, I think it still would have been pretty interesting.
What I would have done differently,
They
had Alex from the first one, played by Devon Shawa. They had him... They just tell the story that he was killed by a falling brick, really.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, they wrote him out because they couldn't meet his contract demands. He wanted more money for the sequel. Honestly, what I would have done was save it. Say he moved away. He's now a loner somewhere, not leaving his house or whatever. Save him for another sequel.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You could have brought him in at the last one.
Yeah, that would have been fantastic. Didn't they? I thought they used him. Not just archival footage, but they got him back.
No, I'm pretty sure in the we'll talk about the Final Destination. Final Destination podcast. 5, I should say. Not the final. The Final Destination is part 4.
Yeah.
We'll talk about Final Destination 5 another time, but I think... I'm not sure. I don't think they actually got him back. I think they used lookalikes or something like that, because you really don't see them close up.
Right. They're just, like, in the background. Or...
Right. Either lookalikes or it was archival footage shot, you know, like...
Different
shot
case,
from a different angle, that kind of thing, you know. Because there are multiple cameras shooting this stuff.
That's always nice to have when you're putting together a franchise like this, and you might need...
Because they did not plan on Final Destination 5, which mm-hmm. we'll talk about another time, of course. They mm-hmm. didn't plan on that because Part 4 is called The Final Destination. They planned that to be the end of the franchise.
Yep.
And then fans demanded something else. Okay, so Final Destination 2, worth seeing.
Yeah, it's definitely, I mean, you can't watch this franchise without having, I don't think any of the films can be left out.
No, you can't just dive into like part 3 or something like that.
Or skip over, you know, this
you
and that.
Yeah,
you
definitely can't watch 2 without watching 1.
Mm-mm.
I haven't seen part 3 in a while. I'm not sure how well it ties in with part 2. But if I remember correctly, they all, with the exception of one movie, make reference to the first one, so...
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of important to watch them all.
Yeah, and I think it's a great example of variations on a theme, which I love. Mm-hmm. You know, people often complain about either sequels or iterations in a franchise being either too much like the original or not different enough from the original, and that just frustrates the heck out of me, because I'm like, make up your minds, you know, which one do you want? You're just never happy, you know. and I like the way they stuck to the formula of premonition, huge catastrophe, people working against the design of death, and then stuff happening to them.
Yep.
You know, and they're trying to figure it out and escape from death's clutches. And I like that formula, and I like the way they just said, okay, let's round up a new cast of characters and plug them into a new incident, and there we go. Movie.
Yep. Mm-hmm. All right. Final Destination 2. Go see it. Go see it. You have to rent it somewhere. Next time on the Monster Club, we continue our look at the Final Destination franchise with Final Destination 3.